Okay, so we're now looking at Bear on a Mountain's questions, and this is question number two. If you could only recommend one book, well, that's asking for so much, film, series, and if you have the hobby game, what would they be?
Okay, let's start with me cursing Bear for asking me to only choose one
Yeah.
book overall. That is a definition of sadism for me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy. Okay, well. It's a difficult one. I have 1,000 choices in my mind now, just battling one another. But I think I might say maybe Crime and Punishment.
I've got to ask why.
Okay, so if you try to simplify the premise, it seems pretty straightforward. Spoilers ahead for anyone not having read it. Just cover your ears and whisper the hymn to the Republic. So essentially, you kill a woman, you repent, or well, you do not repent for about half the book, and that is the story of the book that we're referring to. Just that. So you might feel that, well, why do people love this book so much? Why would I choose that book? It doesn't necessarily have to be an easy read for you to love it, but that is the tricky thing. For instance, you have other similarly beautiful contemporary good fictions like Slaughterhouse by Kurt Vonnegut. And Slaughterhouse, for instance, is a great sci-fi book in the premise of a world war, where the protagonist falls in the trap of a higher purpose in life and murders someone. Yes. Are you getting it where I'm going with this?
I think so, yeah.
Dostoevsky has set the path for the next generation of writers and unarguably produced the best fiction of his time, a time when there were writers like Tolstoy. Neurologists like Sigmund Freud have hailed Dostoevsky as a writer whose impeccable approach to mental analysis of unusual people at unnatural circumstances as the basis of his research. That is not an easy thing to achieve when you're just writing fiction for monetary purposes. Someone has described Dostoevsky as a man equal to 1,000 atomic bombs. And you kind of have to agree with him because Dostoevsky did know his stuff very well. He was a man who was exiled to Siberia, who escaped from death row with a hairline margin, and this guy has been able to see life and death in a few different ways. And that is the reason that you need to read Crime and Punishment, as it is a take on Russian youth. Despicable, hungry stomach, idle brain stuck in an infinite loop of family pressures. Do you relate that to yourself? Well, at least I think that a lot of people do, even after 150 years since the novel has been published. Dostoevsky was a self-proclaimed progressive thinker. He realized youth in a not so fit of temperament murders a woman just because he believed that the rulers, like Napoleon, had committed such nasty and reproachable crimes in their lifetime under the veil of greater purpose of the mankind. Is it acceptable? Can you question their acts? Can you yourself, in the delirium of such a thought process, commit such a heinous crime like Raskolnikov? Can you survive? Not from the law, not the disgrace of the society, not the hurt sentimentalities of your own family, but from your own guilt. That is what the book is about. With no purpose, at least not a definitive one, Raskolnikov has outraged the position of a protagonist's role. taken for granted till then, and he has exploded it. He was not the hero, he was the victim of an ideology which is dangerous not only to himself, but also to the people around him. And if one were to look closer, they would also find the book isn't only about repentance, being the norm in almost all Russian literature, I believe, because you can see that Raskolnikov supports a family from the last penny that he owns. Not from his own pocket, though, which is, well, kind of silly, but perhaps, but for the funeral of a person he met in a bar. This book has just so many hidden layers that you have to unleash, and you find yourself fully submerged in it every single time that you read it. And that is the one of the best things about this book, that it you can read it again and again and again. You could just use a simple allegory to do this. Assume Dostoevsky and Tolstoy standing on a beach, gazing at the horizon. Tolstoy will be brooding about the innumerable life forms in the ocean and their circumstances. Dostoevsky will be brooding about the innumerable circumstances of a single life form. So that is what the book is really about. It's a large canvas of multiple emotions within a single living being.
That's an interesting way of putting it. You have inspired me. I have never read the novel. I may have to add it to my list. I haven't, I'm afraid. I know it's awful of me to say so. I should have done, but I haven't.
It absolutely is. You should get your hands on the copy as soon as you can.
It's on my Christmas list. I'll use my Christmas money for getting that. Films then. Films and series thrill. What inspires you in terms of films and series?
Let's talk about films first. So Barry's asking me to choose only one film. I'm gonna choose two. The first one that I would recommend would be The Princess Bride.
Good choice.
Look, for all the men out there who think that by judging by the title alone, this is a chick flick, it's gonna be romantic and boring. Oh boy, are you wrong.
It is anything but, yeah.
Everything. Is you want to watch an action film? The Princess Bride. Do you want to watch something with a bit of a comedic flair to it? Watch The Princess Bride. Do you want a mysterious story with a plot twist? Watch The Princess Fucking Bride. Do you want some romance sprinkled through the whole thing? Again, watch The Princess Bride. It is amazing. It is refreshing. It is wholesome in such a unique way. It is such an enjoyable watch.
No, I do agree with you on that one, yeah.
I think you've done an audio on The Princess Bride yourself, so you must recognise how wonderful it is.
Probably not in the way that the director of The Princess Bride thought it was going to be done, but yes.
Oh, well, there is no parthenogenesis in art, is there?
No, I'm afraid not.
So that's the first film I would recommend, but the second one would be Dead Poets Society.
Ah, now, again, good choice.
I'm glad that you're endorsing both of my film choices, Mooney. But for anyone unfamiliar with the story, I'm not going to go into too much detail there. I can only say that it is a life-changing film in a lot of ways. It is a film that you can watch when you are a teenager, when you are a college student, when you are a professional in your 30s. You can watch it when you're a father, when you yourself are trying to figure out what you're going to do with your life. You can do whatever you want with it. It's always going to tell you something different. Typically, it is a coming of age sort of film, but I don't think that it leaves you with that. It leaves you with a reminder of what life should really be about, and it urges you to find your own path, to create your own journey through it on your own terms. And I think that we all need to be reminded of that during different points in our
Absolutely.
Life.
And it also reminds us that poetry is meant for one thing, gentlemen, and that is to woo women.
Absolutely. I have not heard anyone say the word woo apart from classic novels.
Well, it has to be said standing on a desk. But
How would I woo a woman?
Well, apart from the obvious flowers and chocolates, but that's a little bit too obvious. To woo a woman, you have to show her that she means everything to you, that she is the most important thing in your life. How you do that is up to you. Find out about her, make her your study. You know, do your research. Find out what she likes, where she likes going, places of interest. What is it that inspires her? What is it that makes her smile? And it's not rocket science. It's just a matter of being diligent, I would say.
Well, I think that any woman who would be the object of your pursuit would be absolutely phenomenally lucky.
Oh, thrill, if only you knew.
Okay, so I gave you two whole film recommendations, and I do believe that you need to watch both of them if you haven't already. And even if you have, as I said, repeatability, watch them again. I'm sure you need it.
It's been a while since I've seen both, but I will take your recommendations for those.
Now, as for series, after a decade of closely following along every single step of the way, of having concocted so many different theories upon theories about the goddamn color and position of a flower, where it has been located on an icy wall and all that, after painstakingly creating multiple fun videos in honor of the show, Game of Thrones absolutely ripped my heart out. So,
oh yes.
Sadly, I cannot in good conscience say that it would be the best film in the world. No, it would be the biggest disappointment in the world. It still pains me to this day.
It was a sad moment in television history.
I remember watching the finale somewhere around 5 a.m. because I couldn't wait to watch it during actual normal people hours. I had to watch the moment it came out, commenting and chatting with other Redditors online and trying to grasp straws about how they're going to turn around. This train wreck can't be our beloved series. Oh no, but it was. It could be, and it was. So
no. I remember actually throwing a peanut at the television. I was that annoyed.
Yeah, I just for months afterwards, whenever someone would try to pick up a conversation with me about Game of Thrones, they would soon after realize that I had committed such a grave mistake, because I would not shut up for 2 hours straight. It would range from, it just makes no sense. I mean, the plot arc is just completely upturned, to all I'm asking for is for the basic knowledge of medieval siege tactics. Is that too much to ask for? On the other hand, a good way to get me going, to get me all riled up and ready for an argument, would be to just say, Oh, yeah, I thought that Game of Thrones Season 8 was a good watch. That could have listened a good hate fuck out of me. You can't.
If Game of Thrones is out, what is your recommendation for a good series?
My recommendation for a good series would be, well, my ultimate favorite series as of yet is Black Sails.
Oh-ho, good choice.
You watched that too, have you?
I am a big fan. There were so many little plot twists going on in there. And John Silver has got to be one of the most incredible characters ever created in literature. They have him in a completely different light, don't they? I mean, that,
absolutely.
Yeah, I've got this, like a lot of people, notion of what he should be, and they completely turn that on its head. So why do you like it?
Part of it is actually corresponding to what you just laid out. I thought that as a prequel to Treasure Island by Stevenson, they managed to shed a whole new light on the already appearing characters there. While reading Treasure Island, I would have never pictured John Silver to begin with as a young, not quite naive, but young, almost comical character was so easygoing, who used his charm to get his way. But boy, oh boy, did Luke Arnold kick that out of the park. He really did. What I loved about Black Sails was that they managed to keep you engaged through incredibly choreographed acts and sequences with a breathtaking tropical exotic background. Amazing music, but to top it all off, the scenario, the writing was impeccable. The dialogue was much more exciting than the action and the fighting scenes. It was such... It really delved into the human psyche, and there were a lot of grey areas, morally or otherwise. By then you couldn't say that, oh, he's evil, or meant to root against him, because there was no such thing. You could see the motivations of each separate character. You could see the merit. So it was never straightforward. It was a pirate story, which was quite realistic. It showed a whole different light. And as much as I love the parts of the Caribbean, it was much more compelling to watch.
They managed to mix in genuine historical fact as well, alongside the fiction, which made it even more believable, at least to a certain point.
Absolutely, yeah. Although I would not use Black Sails alone to further my historical knowledge. It did give me a nudge to look further into it, however.
And it had some of the most gorgeous female pirate captains who have ever sailed the seven seas.
See, I am sure you're talking about an infamous... or a few infamous lesbian scenes. personally, I was elated to see some male nudity portrayed. So just, you know, it has something for everyone. Let's just say that.
Yes, it did. Yeah, it did, I think. And, you know, if we're talking about how disappointing Game of Thrones was, Black Sails was probably to pirates what Game of Thrones should have been.
Absolutely.
To the fantasy genre. You know, you were kept on edge right to the very end, weren't you? And even the last episode had something to say which was incredibly poignant.
Oh, absolutely. And Black Sails, for me, started out a bit mediocre. It wasn't my favourite away, although it has a banger of a first episode. It is one of the most captivating final pilot scenes I have ever watched. That is just pure aesthetics. But it just kept getting better. It was steadily growing and evolving, and it never let you down. And the ending, oh God, the ending was just, the ending we absolutely, irrefutably deserved, and there was no easy way out. No, you still had to think about it, you still had to debate it with yourself, and it was just glorious. So, if I could only recommend one series, I would recommend Black Sails. Also, I mean, just pirates are cool, okay? Pirates are very cool.
Oh, they definitely are. Do you have a favourite game to recommend?
I absolutely do. I do play video games, not as much as I used to, mind you, and only part of it is because I have a bit of an outdated computer, and don't you dare bully me about it, you know who you are. But if I could only recommend one game, again, I hate doing this because there are so many beautiful games that I have loved and adored and cried over and yelled at over the years. I think I would have to choose between the Talos Principle and Fallout New Vegas.
Well, now you've lost me because I'm not a gamer, so.
Well, you are a lover of stories and hard questions, though, so I'm sure you would adore both of those games.
Aha. Story-driven, is it?
Absolutely, and in Fallout New Vegas you make decisions which actually affect the game and the world you're in quite significantly. Plus, for you, there's a lot of jazz and Frank Sinatra in it.
Oh, right. I'm on it straight away.
Well, when you're talking about the Talos Principle, well, just philosophy, artificial intelligence, and the downfall of the human race. It made me totally question my existence once again. That is a Standard Wednesday. The nature of reality and my place in the universe once again.
Very deep, very philosophical, and the game to be immersed in.
Absolutely. And, well, if you haven't spent some time during the small hours of the night yelling at the screen, because it is a puzzle game and it will get annoying and frustrating, trying to argue with an artificial intelligence about what is human conscience and being trapped and pushed against the wall because you answered wrong and now they are throwing your own paradoxical evidence in your face, you haven't lived, my friend.
I will try that. I will try that one night when I have nothing else to do. So, shall we move on to Bear's third question?
Yes, let's.
He asks, what do you do to put yourself into the mindset of the characters you portray?
I think I might have answered part of that question when answering Albie's earlier question about my recording process, but part of the truth is that when you have a good script, the script can do that for you on its own.
Yeah, I agree.
If a script is so written that it makes you feel things, that it makes you relate to the character, whether you have lived such situations or not, it can really speed things up. And I have had the luck of discovering such gorgeous scripts. Indeed, Bear has graced us with such scripts before.
Yes, he has indeed.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just agreeing with you. Yeah, I think Bear has written some excellent scripts.
On the other hand, I would say that I take a good long time just reading and suspending my belief for a little bit, suspending reality around me and just focusing on the words, trying to picture it as something, an event happening to me, and thinking about how I might react to it if it did concern me.
Yeah.
And from then on, you just build up according to something would happen to the character, tailoring it to them, not just yourself. I think that's the simplest way that I can put it, really.
Well, whatever works for you. I mean, if you're not a trained actor, it's difficult to be able to take on a character unless you've got some kind of natural affinity towards them. And that is a good technique. Yeah. Plus, as you say, if you've got a wonderful script to work with, the character pretty much develops themselves, don't they?
Yes, and that is part of the JWA fun. Just finding new characters to play that could potentially be nothing like you. And you can just sleep into them, even for an hour or two, and live a whole other life.
Well, we now move on to some questions from Radiant Umbra. And Umbra asks, what is your favourite book and why? Which I think you've already answered, haven't you?
Oh, no, darling. If another person asks me to choose one book, well, I'm going to choose another book.
Okay.
I am not going to miss out on this chance. Ha ha ha, no. Let's exploit every single loophole there is.
Technically, you've got another book to choose then. What's it going to be?
It has to be The Myth of Sisyphus by Albert Camus.
And why is that?
It snapped me out of my nihilistic, angsty 19-year-old streak, yes indeed, and back into being a more normal, more sane, a little bit more into hot existential philosophers, person. I was introduced to Nietzsche before I read Camus. And we have enjoyed a turbulent relationship ever since. And I have also then subsequently been led down to the path to read Kafka's The Trial. And again, Nietzsche was there too, inviting me to step over the city on poles into the bottomless swamp. So, just to clarify, Nietzsche says that there are no facts, no truth. But after that, some philosophers stopped writing like Kant and started writing like poems. Poets, sorry. Camus says that there is no truth, merely truths. From the evening breeze to this hand on my shoulder, consciousness creates a shimmer of truths. Now, in this book, the main question is the question of the greatest philosophical problem, and according to Camus, the greatest philosophical problem is that of suicide. In order to substantiate this, he makes a parallel, he draws a parallel with the myth of Sisyphus, the titan who was condemned to roll a boulder over on top of a hill for eternity and then watch it roll down back again, having to roll it to the top.
The struggles of a pointless existence.
Exactly, and that's the question he poses. Is our existence as pointless as that of Sisyphus? If there is no God, as Nietzsche has said, we are all condemned to death, and we are conscious that my life, our lives, are absurd. Existentialists arrived there, and they made their leaps of faith to gods. Popper made the leap of faith to reason, but Camus does not want to leap. He asks if we can live with what we already have, this life, absurd as it might be, and not kill ourselves. Nietzsche has said that we make art in order not to commit suicide. Camus tells us that Dostoevsky found his leap here. If we cannot bear to live without belief in an immortal soul, then the immortal soul must be. But Camus will not leap, and he will not choose suicide either. He spends 300 or so pages yapping on about suicide and how, under such a regime, under such a life, the only thing, the only possible choice that we have left is to kill ourselves. And then, almost at the very last second, he turns it all around and he says that the struggle itself towards the heights is enough to feel a man's heart. We must imagine Sisyphus happy. So he decides that we can live with what we have if we remain lucid and conscious and we do not succumb to illusion. After Camus, some other artists created work in order to provoke and maintain the outer consciousness. For example, that is what Samuel Beckett did in Waiting for Godot. He established that sleeplessness, that watchfulness, that silliness of Camus' absurdity. I think that many of us might have been tempted by the leap to reason or to the immortal soul. But this book has liberated me from quite a bit of anguish. It is not that hard for me to imagine Sisyphus happy as he walks down the valley of hell after his rock to start over, stronger than the rock, then striding unencumbered.
Wouldn't Nietzsche make the argument that the struggle is the most important thing about life, that that which does not kill us makes us stronger? So the experience of life is the purpose of life. Or am I simplifying an argument because I'm not a philosopher?
Oh, you know, sometimes that could make philosophy a lot better. They could do with some simplification, if you ask me. But I think that I can answer that with some of Nietzsche's own words. What matters is not eternal life, but eternal vivacity.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, perhaps these two philosophers might align, although I don't think that they absolutely meet with one another. But yes, indeed, Nietzsche was one of Camus' idols, philosophically and otherwise. Simply put, the myth of Sisyphus is introduced in this manner. The burden of Sisyphus is his fate. Perhaps it is a futile and hopeless labor, yes. However, all Sisyphus' sound joy is contained therein. His fate belongs to him. His rock is his thing. In the same way, the absurd man, we, when we contemplate this torment, we silence all of the idols, the illusions that encourage us to elude absurdity. There is no sun without shadow, and it is essential to know the night. If we recognize that, we will be able to live happily, even if we never manage to find a deeper meaning, deeper purpose to the entirety of our existence. Because we must imagine Sisyphus happy if we are to be happy, because ultimately both Sisyphus and our burden is the same.
I think I can subscribe to that idea. Certainly something to explore further. You know, I'm doing this AMA with you, I'm being introduced to some remarkable philosophical ideas that I haven't come across for a long time. I will have to get my books off the shelf again, dust them off, and do a deep dive into the philosophers of the the 19th and 20th centuries and see what I come out with.
It was high time that you were introduced to one of my most annoying qualities, pure philosophy, even when no one wants to hear about it.
Well, shall we move on now to... I don't know if you've answered this question
yes.
as well.
Yes.
Which audio are you most proud of making?
Oh, God, this is just as bad as the book, man. Oh, I can't choose because over my time at GWA, I have loved and adored different audios for different reasons. Some of my very first ones, Natalie's Noir series, I adored playing that character, and the setting was so beautiful and elegant, and the story was compelling.
Yeah.
I mean, the woman kept releasing its chapter little by bit, so it kept just keeping us engaged with the story, and I absolutely loved performing a detective noir lead character there.
I remember eagerly awaiting for you to post the next one in the series so that I had something to bounce off when I did the detective's response to that one. It was a great series. I mean, taken separately or taken
so
together.
Oh, you're so good at that too.
Oh, well, thank you, sweetheart.
It was such a joy to dance alongside you in filling those scripts.
Well, perhaps one day we'll get the chance to dance again.
I would absolutely adore that. But I'm not done.
Go on then.
Am I ever done, really?
No.
No, yes, indeed. You just feel free to skip through anything. I will not hold it against you. I can blabber on for days. Now, well, I cannot not mention the huge Choose Your Own Adventure written by Dark Son of Mine. I mean, the sheer size of the project alone, just having written that, is enough to shock anyone. I was deeply impressed with Dark's writing. He's exceptionally talented, as I'm sure that all of GWA has heard by now, with his second huge Choose Your Own Adventure having been released. But recording that and creating that audio, was an experience in itself, because we're talking about 27 different audios, very distinct endings, so it's time you had to drastically change your personality a little bit. And recording all of that within a day, one after the other, was a surreal experience. And by the end, I was feeling dazed, and I am pretty sure I could feel my identity and my recollection of myself slowly slipping away. I needed a break. Because
it does take a lot out of you, doesn't it, recording? But that many audios, all with different character tropes, and, you know, that was quite an undertaking.
The thing is, during one audio, you were a caring, emotional person who would unload past trauma, and then you would engage in a wholesome affectionate sex, and then the next moment you were raping this bloke and blackmailing him and telling him that who's going to believe you, and I'm going to rip you off and take your alimony checks, and if you're nice to me, maybe I'm gonna throw a little bit of the kid that you're going to leave me with. It is a bit of a small case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, but times 100 or so. It was fun.
That's the main thing. If you're having fun recording, those are some of the scripts that I feel most proud of, not the ones that I've had to struggle to do. Okay, that's an achievement, but the ones where you can genuinely let yourself go and have fun, where you can be that character for however long the script is, and You feel like you've accomplished something that people will want to listen to afterwards. That's a great feeling, isn't it?
I've seen it being asked on GWA quite often. How do you know that an audio has been successful? And I am going to be completely honest. I have fallen victim to the entire counting upvotes.
Oh, no, no, that's a bad road to go down.
But quite recently I've realised that a lot of that is up to chance, and really we are in numbers. Performers are in numbers, and individual listeners aren't just numbers either.
That's a very good perspective.
Yes, and I have found myself, I know this may be a little controversial to hear, but, and it might paint me in an even more of a narcissistic light, but I do like hearing myself, not always. Most of the time, editing through is not a pain, and listening to the final product is usually a great sort of joy to me, because I usually end up with something I am happy with. I can see myself grow as a performer and as an editor. So I think that that is the way that one should measure the success of an audio.
Absolutely. Question number 3. Again, I think you may have already answered this one. How did you stumble across GWA?
I do think that I answered that earlier when I was answering, again, Elvis' questions. Oh, just a small reminder for Umbra. He's just lurking on some subreddit or another, somehow feeling like I had discovered America.
Finding GWA is like finding buried treasure, isn't it? We all remember our first audio.
I wasn't just eager to thrust my pole into its supple peak. That doesn't work, really, does it, for me? Mm-mm.
I was eager to thrust something as well.
Yeah, I think it works better for you, if I'm being honest.
So, the burning question on Umbra's mind, which may relate to that answer you've previously given, is, are you left or right-handed?
Oh, well, Umbra, I am right-handed, but I will have you know that I can, how to put this delicately, pleasure myself with both hands. So,
simultaneously?
Electrically, ambidextrous, let's say.
Simultaneously or one at a time?
Oh, well, a girl can't give out all her secrets.
I would say that that is a useful skill to have. And I will never be able to look at that question in the same way again.
Something so innocent can be turned into something so much more fun so easily, can't it?
You just have a filthy mind, sweetheart.
The tales of my debauchery have been greatly exaggerated, I assure you.
Oh, touche. Question number 5, then, from Umbra. Do you have a favourite non-English saying or phrase? And if so, what is it and what does it mean?
Okay, so let's go back to my classical roots, then. I'm going to hit you with pulvis and umbra sumus, which is a Latin phrase, which is not as much fun as some of Ovid's more sexual phrases. It translates to, we are but dust and shadows. It is a subtle, well, not so subtle, reminder of how insignificant we are. It is that feeling when you look at the starry night sky and you realize you are nothing compared to the never-ending, ever-expanding universe. Billions of stars and galaxies far beyond anything your tiny, teensy human brain could ever comprehend. Literally, we are dust, pieces of sand, and just shadows. So, maybe we shouldn't take ourselves all that seriously and try to enjoy life, improve ourselves, and overcome the burdens and the obstacles we encounter in our life.
Again, I agree with you on that, although perhaps I prefer Monty Python's take on it in the Galaxy Song.
I do love Monty Python, I do have to comment on that, but everybody knows that the superior Monty Python movie is the Holy Grail.
It is the yardstick by which all other Python films are judged. I mean, anything with a Trojan rabbit in has got to be my favourite.
I've just never been able to look at Cochrane the same way since.
I'll bet you haven't. What's your favourite scene? This is an additional question. What's your favourite scene in The Holy Grail then?
It has to be one that I can relate to on such a personal level. The scene where they're fighting, is it the Black Knight? It's been a while since I've watched it. The Dark Knight. And the knight has essentially been amputated. He's a core, a husk. He has a head on a body and that's about it. And he just keeps going on his opponent saying, "It is but a scratch, come on." And that is very much me.
Yeah. The sheer determination.
No, come get me. Even though I am hugely disregarding the reality of what is happening to me at this very moment.
Well, I wouldn't want to take you on because I know what a tigress you are when you're aroused.
Oh, well, you don't know the half of it.
I probably don't, and I'm grateful that I don't.
I don't know how to take that.
As a compliment. Definitely as a compliment.
Yeah, sure.
Did I manage to wheedle my way out of that one?
There was a valiant effort, let's say.
Thank you.
Not a successful one, but a valiant one nonetheless.
Okay, I'll give it a go.
So, to get back to this question, the other phrase, it's not so much a phrase as it is a snapshot of history, the meaning that it carries with it. It's a word. It's an ancient Greek word, aika. It is one of the multiple ancient Greek words used to establish a condition, to establish an if, it just translates to if. Now, why is that important? Well, because it has been reported that when Philip II of Macedon, Alexander the Great's father, sent word to the Spartans saying that if I should invade Laconia, I shall drive you out, the Spartans laconically responded with, "If."
Yes, that does sound like quite a Spartan response, doesn't it? Economy with words.
They certainly could support that, though. Even though on the side of history, I will always side with a shrewd, cultivated and patrons of the arts, Athenians, the Spartans could write checks in that their bodies indeed could cash. Subsequently, Philip II never invaded Sparta. One small example of Spartan culture. According to the legend, when the Persians had the Greeks around in Thermopylae and sent a messenger to demand the Greeks surrender their weapons, Leonidas responded, "Come and take them." Modern Laver, pretty much a Spartan, "Come at me, bro." Another story goes that a young soldier complained to his mother that his spear was too short, and her response was that he needed to add a step forward. Some people might know this from the movie, which is wildly historically inaccurate, by the way. Please do not use that as a source for your information on ancient Greek history. Please Do
Well,
not.
I did kind of think that the rhinoceros was going just a little bit too far.
Oh, that was your issue, not the Persian king bathed constantly in gold and being like 6, 7, 8 foot tall, feet tall, even.
Well, you can take artistic license with a Persian god king, can't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
I think
Yeah,
it
a
was
little
the
bit.
painted on abs that did it for me.
That too, and also thing is, was the whole bloke yelling, "This is Sparta," in a Scottish accent before booting a guy down a hole.
Yeah, Gerard Butler probably didn't get the correct accent, but I know there are generations of women out there for whom he is eternally the phantom.
I just think that if encapsulates the attitude that you should at times exhibit in life. When faced with adversity, don't back down. Know thyself and rise up to the occasion.
I don't know if you're familiar with Rudyard Kipling's poem, If,
No, I don't think I am.
which pretty much picks up on that idea. And I don't know, but I do wonder whether or not he was influenced in any way by that classical sentiment, probably given his educational background, he was. And he lists all the qualities that a man should have, talking to his son. If you can do this, my son, if you can be this, then you will be a man. It's a very stirring poem, to all the positive qualities that one might expect or encourage in a child. And, one of my favorite poems.
Oh, well, we're learning something new about you, little by little.
This is your AMA, sweetheart, not mine.
Oh, well, I'm really happy to have you here, so I definitely don't mind.
You can have me anytime and in any way you wish to.
I didn't notice that you chuckled and hesitated a little bit there. Why was that?
My mind was just slightly sidetracked with a few very improper thoughts that an interviewer should not have about his interviewee. So getting to the, well,
Oh yes, file yourself back into being a gentleman.
again, I try my best. Gentlemen, well, sometimes perhaps. I think we've answered all the questions
Did
here.
I? I'm sure
Yes,
that
you
all of you
did.
are quite relieved that I will finally stop talking.
I'm going to give you a round of applause and say it has been an absolute pleasure to guest your be a guest on your AMA and to hear some of the very interesting little tidbits you gave out about yourself, which make some fascinating bits of information, I must say. None of which, of course, are going to be used against you in the future.
Absolutely not.
And I look forward to what you're going to do for your 1,000th follower, which is not that far away now, is it?
No, it isn't. I kind of pushed it by releasing this email so late, so I will need to plan a little something for to commemorate that occasion.
Well, you have a wonderful evening, Thrill. It has been a delight and a pleasure talking to you. And I'm sure your
Well,
fans.
thank you so much for being here with me.
My pleasure.
It has been my own honor and delight to have you and bouncing answers and questions back and forth with you. And it has been an incredible pleasure to answer some of my listeners' questions and to allow them to get to know me a little better in a different sort of intimacy, if you will.
Absolutely, some very interesting questions there as well. So thank you to your listeners. I hope they get some pleasure out of listening to your answers. I'm sure they will.
Even as nails, they can have something to listen to as they fall deeply into sleep.
Well, you have a pleasant evening, Thrill, and I look forward to hearing the final product when it's fully edited. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too, sweetheart. Ciao for now.